very much, Paul. I need my stuff. I need it again. Good evening, everybody. Maybe I need to get my stuff. Is it all over here? I need to hear you. I'm going to begin with, I'm going to read a poem. It's probably the title poem of the next book I'm going to bring out with Alan House, coming out to be launched on the 4th of December in the County Library in Castle Island and in Dublin in the Unitarian Church on the 8th of December, and that's the usual. And this is called Homeland in a Way. I suppose it's got to do with the fact that I emigrated in 1981 to Germany and spent most of my time there until now, and I still go over and back. I'm in the west of Ireland, in Killeadon, the birthplace of the old poet Anthony Rathbury, who was buried in Killeany Churchyard as we go along the Enoch County Galway. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but I just read this first to start. Homeland and Away. God held the keys to my homeland in the west of Ireland, hence my fear of facing home. Truth was hard to come by. As a child, I would talk to myself, hang around old trees and watch names grow back to bark. Some, dead for years, were found hanging in isolated farmhouses, only to return in myth and legend. When there was no other way out, we went to confession. To say we were unhappy is to say too much. We had laughter from the Celts, and we could sing of sadness, but economy was in England and elsewhere. There was no cold or hot season, shoes were not a must, and we could sleep in our clothes. The Atlantic was never far off. It insisted on its quota of corpses. But after the choir had sung and a few cards sold, families got up from the table, wrapped up as best they could, and vanished into church records. Others dropped the spade where they stood, walked up the helpless road, and never looked back. I'm old enough to leave my homeland a second time. I'm going to concentrate a little bit on, the west of Ireland for just for a few, and then I'll read a couple of some other places as well. And, you know, over the last year we've had all the Celtic revival and Celtic Tiger and everything else, and I had this thing about a couple returning, you know, coming back and shining and being all full of Celtic bling and jewellery and everything else. And I called it a couple's return. And they crossed the bridge on a tiger to show how rich they were that summer. The tiger was white, glossy, and covered in multitudes of sweat and hallmarks. She was layered in the skin of crocodiles, and he in the style of him and gentry. The beast had nails of ivory and gold, its harness dazzled in the spray of the moon. Some stood in rows cheering, but most turned to the hilt, tip-top, fish pulled away. Autumn looked after itself. The bank manager shared his special joke with them. They settled for a big house where the tiger could show off by the front door. They did B&B. The neighbors left them to themselves until he began painting an old boat and she read destiny in cups. She's graying. He's fishing with his father. The tiger stuck in a hedge. just recently, I was travelling, not recently, just after last Christmas, there was a bit of frost on the road. And I was going one Monday morning to travel to Kilkenny to do a few workshops from Mayo, and you go right across the Midlands. And I was just at 8 o'clock in the morning, I was dead tired, but I had to be there about 9:30 in Ballyragget in Kilkenny. And so I said, driving very slowly, all the frost. I was going along the road somewhere outside Tullamore, I can't remember, but it was a narrow bit of the road. And I saw this guy. And he was a sort of big guy, and he had this old car at the side of the road, and he was trying to pack his sheep into the boot of his car. And it reminded me a lot of my own childhood. You know, my father was a farmer and my mother was a teacher. And my father would go to fairs and markets and things, But if he saw a few pigs he liked, the young ones, the little bonds as they call them, then he'd stick them into the back of the car. And of course, maybe naturally, the whip in the car wouldn't be great, you know. My mother used to go mad, you know. She'd want to go to a teacher's meeting or something semi-respectable, you know, where they play the piano or something. And the place would be stinking of pigs and everything, you know. So you can imagine what it was like. So, and it had this vision of this guy, and it's on there with this big sheep, and he's trying to get it into the back of a Toyota. I reckon it's a Toyota, I'm not too sure. And I thought to myself, well, maybe he had been reincarnated from the west of Ireland. You know, there's a lot of old lads over there in the west of Ireland on the side of the hills with a few sheep. And I figured maybe this guy had died years ago, and that he had reincarnated, and he was just appearing again somewhere over there somewhere between that lawn and Abbey Lee, something like that, you know. Anyway, this is called A Man, a Big Sheep, and a 92 Toyota. There was no way in and no way out for a big sheep. Halfway in and halfway out was the boot of a 92 Toyota, just after the 8 noon, one March morning in 09, on a tight corner between Athlone and Abbey Lee. The sheep struggled in the arms of a man, the image of Patrick from over our way, who had been found rotting on a turf bank without garments or staff in the last century. Women from a habit factory had swaddled him and shoved him into a cave of a grave next to the remains of a mountain yoke, without pomp, ceremony, or mention of an afterlife. He'd be bone white by now. A neighbour said he'd been fond of sheep. He might well have been. But on dull day, his eyes swayed from side to side, his mouth wore the smile of a chosen one, waddling under a dirty cap as he traced from pub to pub, shouting, "Hosanna, Hosanna," in a Mayo accent, to confuse nesting crows, he'd say. He must have known he could pop up, delivered in a new life further east with a bigger flock. I'd like to believe Patrick appeared to me between Athlone and Abbey Lee one March morning just after 8. Perhaps this was a new start with a big pregnant sheep. The man struggled, the sheep struggled. He was as dirty as the sheep. Patrick, you and I must journey as sheep dealers, poets, oilmen, and actresses with dancing eyes. But what time are we in? What mirage? Do dreams change the texture of the road? That we have neither geography nor direction. I'm heading for Kilkenny to read poetry in schools in the Roar and Ballyrite. And you? I will never leave you, great mutton snatcher, if you promise not to get that struggling animal into your car before my poem is complete. You are my little brother, my little sister, my wife, my small boy, my big son, my dead parents. I never want to know what we would do without each other, or with each other, in the same rain, in the same dark, by a lost church on a mountain, catching an underground of Maria Callas in the background, while I sit inside this window, facing the far hills, wondering if we have ever been. Thank you. I just changed to Hamburg a little bit, you know. I lived in Hamburg for half my life, in Germany, and I love the place. I go over flat over there, I go over and back. It's a beautiful city. Matthew's been there a few times, and we're meeting again there at the end of October for some work. But it's very special. I don't know what it is about the place, but I love, you know, the beach and stuff there, and the something, you know, you have the Reeperbahn and all that stuff. And, but not only that, but it's just this generous lifestyle. I love it. There's a couple of words here. Pavilion is the pavilion, you know, it's kind of a cafe. The Alster is a river that forms a lake in the centre of Hamburg. Schwanwijk is a rich area on the other side of this lake in the centre of the city. Whatever, Rathausmarkt means, for I'm sure most of you know, it's just a town hall square. And that's it. And it's the word city. Anyway, by the Alster Pavilion in Hamburg. Late morning in a good life. I have my back to the pavilion and my face to the flat autumn water of the Alster. Swans out there notch the verges and gardens of Schwanwijk. Inside there's ostriches and tea, cordials and exotic coffees for regular and passing trade. boats sway in their shadows. I'm exiled in the picture on a sunny Saturday in November with an Irish harp in my head. I turn to the city to face Hamburg, to a flock of seagulls among spires dipping and diving into Rathausmarkt. They could have been from anywhere. There's a horse cart in a shed behind a house in Ireland. Heavy loads are done for. An old man stands by the shed wall, talking to himself, passing on old ways to the wind. He's waiting to be called in for tea. I imagine I had a wild child's head, ready wings and feet to land anywhere. I'll be going to the football later. A breeze with a sharp edge will blow up the pitch. Is that the same wind that blew the roof of our granary? There were steps up, but the floorboards were rotten. If I had gone through the floor, I'd have ended up among cows. Now is a good time to stop.
Just a second, I left stuff here somewhere. Oh, here you are.
I was in, I think Paul said at the beginning that I was translated into Indonesian. I just read something from there. I was invited to the Writers' Festival in Bali, which is lovely. Had a great time, paradise on earth, wonderful. Put flowers around your, all around your tongue. Put you to a car. Oh, so great, of course. The lads could only see me now. There was no money in it, but it was fantastic. And the occasion was the launch of the book into the Indonesian language, and it was wonderful. And the publisher came to the small hotel I was staying in Bali. She had come from Yogyakarta and Java, and came up at 7 o'clock in the morning. She arrived at the small hotel. It was an amazing moment, really. The atmosphere, and I was able to sleep because I got in late the night before. And this is called a writer's festival on Bali. In a few hours, the Writers' Festival in Ubud is to begin. The town is on the verge of dawn. Sun and rooster rhyme climb into my bloodstream. I try to visualize what I see, but only see what I sense in the percolating dark. I cannot wait for your passage, God. Rebirth has already begun building in my bones. I can hear it. There are no window panes to filter heady scents sauntering in and out of my bedroom, and the shower is open to the sky. Life and I seem to be pulling away from each other, and there are other demons that just won't be stilled, like flowers on the brain, like colors on the tongue, like so many shades whispering. My feet have grown cold on the marble, but feel as silky as fresh growth after rain. Something small slipped off the wall. There'll be workshops and reading later. It's special to be trapped in a morning ritual with a little rice field across the street. An electric trill and parrot-like whistle have joined in. I feel undressed and clumsy, yet sheltered in clusters of thicker wind. Roosters have grown still, but a cement mixer takes over as Rosa Heliani walks up the road with my new book in her language. This moment feels like a stair, warming step by step as it leads down and down. No other words will do. I'll read them. This poem here, A Gypsy Woman in Ireland, was published in the Singing Slider a couple of years ago, and it was kind of, it's strange how a poem kind of goes out of date a bit, but I'll read it anyway. There was a time, I remember coming back to Dublin, and I had been in Hamburg, and I came back, and I hear all people talking about all these foreigners and gypsies, and all the people were coming to Ireland, and they were stealing stuff in the fields, and they were robbing everything, and nothing was safe, and you think, the people have only come over trying to find a new way, like we did when I was over working at business sites in England, and half our ancestors neighbored their way across the world, and there's a few gypsies somewhere around the country and a few foreigners, and God, they were in the, they imagine them all over the place on their hands and knees, like digging up our precious spuds, But anyway, I call this A Gypsy Woman in Ireland, and it's strange how very short and it's slightly out of date because the times change, but I'll read it anyway. A gypsy woman in Ireland. These days in Ireland, people talk about the price of sites, the cost of tribunals, property abroad or foreigners, refugees. Lazy people come for our riches, but won't work. They steal, eat raw from our fields, blacken our reputation, and colour the skin of our children. I am Sonia, a gypsy woman who dreamed colours and grew up gathering berries in a village in Romania. I earned my way to university to become a doctor and the pride of my mother's heart. My father never had a nation and died in Auschwitz. I was arrested with a bundle of leaflets, and when I had to flee to Ireland, I was sad not to be a doctor, not to visit my mother's grave, to marry an Irishman. I have never stolen. I am spring clean, stalk strong, proud and honest as the memory of snails and owls in our desolate garden. I fled when a sneering bullet ended my mother's life. She died at the mean will of our state, in our house, in my place. Now I can only shelter behind my husband's curtains in a childless fourth-floor flat before closing time in Dublin. I still see my uncle blazing with his shining sickle in shirt sleeves. My husband in Ireland, you gave me my first passport and beat me daily for the sighs and secrets in our troubled death songs, like Irish songs. For my childhood in fields, for our hawks, falcons and silver, for the poetry in our people. I should be able to talk in the shops, but they listen away from my accent. I cannot tell them of our winters, of our trees whistling like the shades of accordion music. I have learned to hide behind candles in churches, to disappear into the woodwork, or to listen to the distant patients in the singing of my ancestors, homeless in Romania, homeless in Serbia, homeless inland, homeless in Germany, homeless in the East, homeless in Russia, homeless in England, homeless in Albania, homeless in the North, homeless in Europe, homeless in the South, homeless in Ireland. The flowers have gone out on another summer. I'm a year closer to my mother. Now I lighten it up a small bit, and I have a couple of love poems here, and they're kind of not even love poems, thankfully, you know. There's nothing worse than love poems, is there? I'll take it all too seriously and stuff, so it's very hard to write something like that. So I call this thing here, and this is called New Love. This is a short thing. When a man asks a woman to take off her clothes, she said she would, and she did it most days anyway. True love. I knew a lovely lady who gave me a flower for my wall and a mirror for a ring. She had a room full of silk and was as unfaithful as could be. But next morning, when we sat blushing and glowing in perfume, she beat it because she didn't know where we belonged. Lady of Japan. I met a lady on a quay in Japan, and we never spoke a word. But we smiled and sang of lost love and of flowers in spring wind. She pointed up to their mountain without as much as a whisper. I saw her people in color, and she was a seaman's bride. I am not a seaman, nor do I ever want to be, but I met a lady on a quay in Japan, and we never spoke a word. Lovely women. Reuben's women were round and fat. Beckham's wife is very thin. Reuben's women are alive and well. With Beckham's wife, you cannot tell. Our last horse. horse died in the arms of the family without leaving it foaled. We hung our things on metal pegs in the shed, legged it down the road to buy our first tractor, and only looked back to see if the drills were straight. You can leave this level with this. Love in the gallery. In the gallery of the master, women come and go. The master works hard by day, and by night he often sleeps with women, lining up to be painted or to keep his brushes clean. The master sometimes wonders why he can't become a woman and have done with it, or drink himself to death in a single night of happiness, for he loves red wine and can't live without. Paternal love. A father who had beaten his son to death told the court he'd been trying to make a man of him. This is love poem.
Did I leave my little paper somewhere?
Yeah, there it is.
Oh yeah, I did. No, that wasn't
wrong.
Oh, I just
have it here.
Yeah?
There's little bits of paper everywhere. I have it here, yeah. Right, now, I'd like to maybe read a couple of poems from this book here, Caledon and Nowhere Else, because I come from Caledon, the birthplace of Anthony Rafferty. He was born on my father's field at the back of the house, and there's a stone there where he was born in 1778 about, and he died in 1835 in County Galway. In County Mayo, his birthplace, he was there since the age of 24 about, and he worked for the local, even though he had got smallpox at the age of 10, and he was either fully blind or partially blind, no one is quite sure. At the age of 24, the story goes that the landlord, Taff, was the name, he was on the beer and drinking the whiskey at the time, and he said to Rafferty, he asked Rafferty to go to Kitchener, which is a couple of miles up the road, 2 miles up the road, to go on by, saying, how are you?
How's it going?
How's it going, yeah?
That's right.
Do you know the story?
There's a variety of versions of the story.
But anyway, allegedly, when he went around the corner very quickly on the back of this thoroughbred horse, the horse broke his back. He landed in some kind of ditch, and Rafferty couldn't take turns, so he never came back. And so he walked the roads of Mayo all the way somehow up to County Galway, and he's buried now in Killeen Churchyard in County Galway near Crockwell. And between Crockwell and,
right,
you know it. And I, about 10 years ago, I took a little, you know the way the Israelis, the Jews, they take stones and they put them on a grave as a mark of respect. They walk around, they pick stones and they heap stones up on the grave. And I thought, well, I'd take a little stone from Rafferty's grave and I put it in my wallet. And I was in Australia about 2 years later. I was right on residence in Melbourne. And I thought to myself, I was taking my wallet out, I wanted to get some money or something. And the stone fell out of my pocket, or out of my wallet, and went down into a gully. And that was the end of the stone from England. I thought it was kind of interesting. But anyway, this book here with Sally McKenna and myself, it's a book really that's based on my childhood, on childhood memories. And some of it I like a lot, some of it I don't, but it is a kind of a statement. It's kind of about my childhood and the experience of the West of Ireland as a young boy. It's very nicely illustrated, you can look at it here if you wish afterwards. Euston Station, Dublin, three trains have come and gone, and the fourth will run me into the charging west wind. I'm a man in a raincoat with a backpack full of transient slobber and a toothbrush. The sun outside spreads itself about like a beauty on a blustery beach, not avoiding me, not seeking me. Tomorrow is tomorrow and tomorrow's footprint. Today is breath after tangled breath. Now is now, in and out of step, with today. There are no great lines in this for me, except that I am made in the image and flesh of Celadon. It is my birthplace. And even if some of my best times here have been spent elsewhere, I have cherished strolling the banks of the unreal, hand in hand with an old blind bard. Come with me, and I will show you a landscape in my blurred vision. Clean the bank into the shampoo, sharpen the schlong, cut the turf, tea in the bowl. Breast turf, black turf, brown turf, white turf, tea in the bowl. Spread the turf, turn the turf, put the turf, plant the turf, tea in the bowl. Turn out the turf, draw the turf home, throw in the turf, stack the turf, tea time. Bring in a few salts, say the rosary, pray for souls departed, rake the fire, bedtime. Take out the ashes, stoke the fire, day in, day out, in the cycle of turf. Week in, week out, in the cycle of turf. Year in, year out, in the cycle of turf. Through the ages, in the cycle of turf. Ashes to ashes, in the cycle of turf. In the cycle of fire, in the cycle of life. Nobody knew some houses in Celadon, for they were bolted inside and outside and empty within. And rumor had it nobody knew one man at all, for he wore lingerie and stealing chicken under dark. And just one or two more sections. Men were real men of sin and wrinkles, in and out of the rain, in and out of the sun, in and out of the bog, in and out of season, in and out of boat trains, in and out of alien labor, in and out, over and back, in, out, back and over, for a decade or two, in out of work, at home forever, in the end. When the boy was a boy, he had dreamt of lanes and wild flowers. He had dreamt of heifers in a top field. He had dreamt of words like Rio Grande, beauty queen, racehorse past the post. He had stood by a river and looked across at home on the other side, dreaming of his children. And he looked down at his own footwear, took a donkey jacket from a landlady's back door peg, and set out for a building site with tears in his eyes. Women were real women of sin and wrinkles, in and out of the rain, in and out of the sun, in and out of the bog, in and out of season, in and out of the kitchen, in and out of maternity, in and out, up and down, in and out, up and down, in, out, down and up to the river, in, out of a floral dress, at home as ever, in the end. When the girl was a girl, she had dreamt of streets where there was no grass. She had dreamt of a parasol by the beach. She had dreamt of words like Edwardian, leading lady, movement of tiny feet. She stood at the river and looked across at Hollywood on the other side, dreaming of drapes. And she looked down at her own footwear, took out a raincoat from the back door peg, and walked to benediction with tears in her eyes. The time has come when I can stand beside Rath Street stone and bush, beside the gravestone of my great-grandfather, Sadie Conlon, and reel in a chunk of my own history. History has left its mark, my own story to me. History has left its mark. Loud calls from abroad gave hope, but they left men, lone men and women, behind to dream of grass that might come up greener. I remember seeing an elderly man weeping into a filthy pollard bag at the wheel of his abandoned tractor in a leafy, secluded lane one Sunday. His neighbours would have been as mad. I'll just read one or two more pieces then, and then we kind of draw this part of the evening to a close. I remember being in Hungary, Budapest, and I was going to the back to the, shortly after the war went, and I was going back to the airport in a taxi, and we were just chatting, and the taxi driver was talking about the new Budapest, and you know, the young people all wanting to go to America. That's all they had in their heads. He said they want to get out to the West. America was the West.
and he talked about, you know, how difficult it was and how to hold on to your own culture and all that kind of stuff. And I just wrote this poem, it's called A Taxi Driver's Tale in Budapest. People used to say, day sounds, night shades and music vibrated just beyond the last house on the last street of the last estate. It was easier in America, they said. There would be freedom to eat the biggest burgers and ladders to the sky. People became kings and queens in the kingdom of the blues. You could lie high up at night and listen to the chatter of stars. Your fingers strummed on their own, far from exhausted workshops, limping trams and unwholesome playgrounds, or from the wisdom of Mulner, Kretzler and Tuft. The tragic ghosts of Dionysius, even satire and bird, would be old pain in blue America. The new muse was far from the tear-stained comedies of the East, and Woody Allen lived in like a rich sin in the jazz clubs of New York. Janosch, Juden, Thomas, and Gabriella left tall buildings and European ways for narrow beds in a city that never sleeps. Their parents' faces hung like Hungarian woods, and snow lay deep on railway tracks on the memories of 1956. Their friend Sultan came too. They got a room in Brooklyn where they kept a photo of children hurrying to a music lesson in costumes of the homeland they'd left to find an outlet for snarling blood. They hunted in opium pools, backstages and deep clubs for something strange in the bones and fantasy of America, for snatches of rhythm, and made this dark blue world their own. They slept between shards of daylight, lost sight of ancient city rituals and the works of Bartok. They were insomnia, gyrating like legends in exile. Nobody granted them a stage to play and sing of cobblestones and lost railway tracks. They scurried about with a bag of dismal quavers to give day and night some sense of order. One winter, Zoltan bought a gun to get some music back. When he failed, he traded gifts from a great city on the Danube for money before walking out into blue America. Now, I just finish up with, let's see, hang on a second. As I said, I come from County Mayo, and a good 3 years ago I wrote a poem called Haunting Mayo, not hunting, haunting, and it was based on the fact that you'd often see guys travelling around the west of Ireland in the car with the elbow sticking out,
yeah.
And they'd be kind of jack-o'-lads, and they kind of know a bit about everything and a bit about nothing. And you had the same kind of guy in the north of Germany, and they called him a manta fowler. That's a kind of an open manta, a driver, an open manta. He drove the car and he was going around the place and knew a bit about everything, observing everything and things. So this is called Haunting in Mayo. I'm a man about town with my window down, the length and breadth of the street. Up, down, hands around as handy, and a full tank for the call when it comes. At large, I supply virgins with experience, never on the coast. The interior is deep and slow, and I've had my elbow out for 20 years. I've got tall tales for the Yanks. There are babies in the fog and mothers in America. That's not tall. Father mixed the man, built a house for his mother. He did. I'm a man about town. I got my window down. I talk to a furs after closing time, when urinating and saw spirits spurting slurry till the horizon lay. I urinated more and swore I'd drink in a stranger village where dogs did chase cars, and it's summer for victims of house-high shadows. The long and the short of social welfare. A bouncer who thinks twice at home or as far away as Germany, or even America, where they tear up Route 66 with elbows all in place and a deadly mission around the eyes. I'm small time, the length and breadth of the street, from village to village, always alone. Girls scatter in a blaze of feathers, and when I swivel, they fall one by one. I stopped for a drink by a great great river, and the panting fish were floating. They come up for air. Big men on the bank sang the Blue Danube, put the boot down. A holy man was standing on a hill, spraying all the color away. Blessed are the meek, for they shall possess the land. The auctioneer was not so sure, but the holy man continued spraying. I'm a man about town, I've got my window down. I've been working on my own grave for years, digging. Girls trip past and ask, what's your name, handsome? Paul, I say. Are you the saint? Better to marry than to burn. I dig deeper with my elbow out. The holy man is happy. He sprayed most of the color off the hill. God created the world, all it is. He swears all the color will be gone before Sunday. Praise the Lord. Lord, I am not worthy, said the poor woman with endless kids, the length and breadth of the street. Raphael Philip was blind, but he covered Chilegon in red and black berries. I hang about the post box in search of news. Nothing. I turn the corner to where men abound and my ears go haywire. I haven't seen a pig for years, or a carrot on the loose, or a proud turnip on a platter, or a house without a lawn, or a top dog without or a top shelf without wheat killer, or even a top dog. When Mrs. O'Brien's mule got stuck in the bog, she left it there. I've got my window down, my foot off the juice. The neighbor with a new bike is talking again. The bog road is coming back. A witch was sighted on an outlying broom. What are you having, Miss Love? That witch has been damaged. Burned, that witch. I'm still a man about town with my window down. The length and breadth of the street.
I'm usually organized, but I want to read one little short thing before I finish. And this is a letter at the end of a poem. In Germany you had the last war, the tragedy of the last war, and you had a generation after that who suffered an awful lot themselves because of the guilt and everything else. And I had this whole thing about, you see, people kind of never finding sort of a way forward after that. A lot of young people after the war, and they, you know, your parents, the father died at the front, and your family broken up, and all kinds of chaos. So it wasn't just only the winners. History is written by the winners, but the losers lose as well, you know. So this is called About Albert, and it's just simply a letter. Dear Mother, why did you leave me all those years ago? My wings were too young to keep me hanging in the sky, but I know it was in spring. They placed you pale and firm in the clean earth. You used to bring red to weaving flowers and unwrap layers of heat and rain on thick grass. I was orphaned in garlands, seeing the sky slowly turn its back on me. Now you are at one with persistent darkness, but when I see us crossing fields of barley, I curtsy to your humming of Mozart's Sauerflöte from a suspended rock on the headland. There never was time to stare at shop windows. War and your sickness left me ragged lost, and a photo of an older woman in a distant country. I have sifted through women and corners, opened my heart behind hedgerows, sprang helplessly at the messenger's throat, with nothing but a fingerprint attached to the surface of my universe. I change my tune to meet the needs of every wretch in suburbia. I don't want to be alone in paradise. I remain your son. Albert. Thank you very much.